Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my co-host, Al McDonald. Hi, Al. And Al is muted. See, that's what editing is for.
I am doing great today, Robin. Thank you very much. Get our little technical difficulties out of the way right at the beginning, and looking forward to a great podcast with our guest today.
Well, I'm excited about this one. And Al, you didn't have the benefit of meeting the first time, but we had such a fun conversation the first time. I said, I'm going to book this, even though Al is not with me today. So joining us is Subi Al-Sayed. He is the founder and CEO of Culture Rebellion. And if you are seeing the clip that we post across social channels, you will see he is wearing his branding today, which I'm so happy about because I put my brand everywhere I can as well. But this is a company that is leading a revolution in wellness by fermenting change and raising a glass to a gut-friendly way of life. So we're excited to dive into this innovative journey. Subi, welcome to the show.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it was such a great conversation, and we will thank our good friend Rob Barlow for the introduction. Again, one of the things that surprised me a little bit with the podcast I didn't anticipate was all the great people that I would meet. And of course, they know other great people. And Subi, we had such a fun talk the first time. We knew we had to record a podcast. But where I'd like to start is yourself as a startup founder. What would you say has been the most critical factor in scaling something like Culture Rebellion from an idea that you recognized at some point to become a leader in fermentation tech? And I was hoping part of that, because we chatted about it in our first chat, about where this whole idea came from and the why behind it. So I know I've thrown a lot at you, so the rest is up to you.
Yeah, that's going to fill up a whole podcast for sure. Shout out to Rob first. He's a family friend, and he was actually with me from the very early days of this journey, very interesting journey just before COVID. So maybe I should back up a little bit, start from the very beginning. My background is in engineering. I worked in real estate and construction. I was in Dubai for many, many years working on interesting projects. And then in Toronto, I worked in consulting and design and construction of buildings. And later in that journey of my life, I was part of the whole green building movement, LEED certification for buildings. Very passionate about, you know, sustainability and innovation in general. Then I moved into the development side. So I worked with leading developers here in Canada and also in the US, with the main focus is on bringing innovation into the built form. So my focus was on bridging that gap between innovation, which in the last 10 years or so was predominantly coming from the startup ecosystem into the corporate world, with a focus on the built environment. So that would be like sustainability, clean tech, smart mobility, smart energy, smart buildings, and so forth. And as part of my role, I had to work heavily with startup companies as a mentor, as an advisor. So I was at DMZ, Mars Discovery District, Techstars. I also worked a lot on commercialization projects or de-risking projects to help startup companies in that space find the right fit with the right customers. And we actually did real demonstration projects and real buildings, live buildings, to demonstrate what the technology can do or what it cannot do. And either way, if the project was a success or a failure, it was good for us because that unlocked investment and commercialization of the company. So by like 2018, I reached what I thought was the peak of my career in corporate. I reached the success that I thought I wanted. Wasn't good enough for me. I wasn't really feeling fulfilled. So there was a parallel story happening at the time, health-wise, personally. My personal life was going through some disruptive transformation, if I'm allowed to use the startup terminology here. So as a result, you know, stress and change, my gut health really impacted. So I had, I think it was early symptoms of a leaky gut. So basically, like, you can't eat much, you can't eat anything, everything's affecting you, you're sensitive to many things. So I refused to take medication. I'm a believer in food. You know, food is really good, healthy food, natural food is a good way to keep you healthy, especially if you don't have a trauma and injury. It's chronic diseases usually, in my opinion, my experience, are better treated with lifestyle and food. So I was able to actually restore my gut health. I came across work of Dr. Stephen Gundry. He's a surgeon in California turned expert on gut health. And I was able to transform my pantry at home. So everything I ate was following his guidelines. And it basically, in simple terms, is you're basically starve the bad bacteria, feed the good bacteria. And then within 8 months, a year, you should restore a balance. And then you're more resilient, being aware of what to consume, what not to consume, and so forth. So there was big emphasis on food elimination. And that was a key component in the origin story of what I'm doing right now, because I had to eliminate many ingredients, food ingredients, which was fine. I was able to find alternatives or live without them. But the grains were on the top of that list. And that meant I could not drink my craft beer. And that was the turning point for me.
I have a tear coming down my cheek as you say that.
So I really struggled with the fact that, you know what, in order for me to be healthy, I can't really socialize. I can't enjoy being out with my friends. I know this is not really a first world problem. It's not really a big deal. But I was at a point in my life where I was just tired of being told that things can be done differently. That was the trigger, because I was told you can't have beer with no grains. So that became my personal innovation project, per se, you know, like no budgets, no timelines. And at the end of the day, I go home and that's all I do. Like, I just tinker around. I did my research. I read. I shadowed the head brewer in Toronto. I learned how to brew. I reconstructed an IPA using bacteria, yeast. Obviously, there was 6 to 8 months of trials and messy kitchens, but eventually it worked. And I was able to create my own drink that I would take with me to friends' parties, or when people come over, they enjoy it with me. And it kept me aligned with my diet and my lifestyle at the time. And it was delicious. People loved it. I had a lot of fun doing this. I started to create more and more of these versions of beers that I like, from sours to porters to, like, fermentation is fascinating. It's a very fascinating field. And then when I started hearing many times that, Subi, this is delicious, you have to sell this, I knew there was something there. That was like summer 2019. It was the end of my corporate journey. I knew I wanted to make a change. I was really fascinated by startups and the creative freedom that they have, the passion, not knowing what it involves to be a founder of a company, obviously. But I was fascinated by that aspect that I had access to at the time. So I knew I wanted to do something in the startup field, but not to rush into something. I wanted to create a beverage, one drink, put it in the alcohol store, LCBO, for those who are familiar with the terminology, and just brag about it. Say, you know what, I have a drink at the LCBO, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then sure enough, end of 2019, I started working with a small college in Ontario. They have a little brewing lab. We did the first generation or iteration of the drink that was not made in my condo kitchen. And then fast forward, COVID happened. So we were shut out our facility. So all that I did during COVID, I just was interviewing brewers and winemakers and cidery makers and, you know, all of the fermentation facilities to see, like, who would co-pack or manufacture the product for me or make it for me. And the consistent message was, if it's not beer, it's not wine, if it's not cider, we don't want to do it, we don't know how to do it. And just to back up, like, the biggest challenge for me was also with other social drinks. Well, you know, I was sensitive to many of them because of the added, now I know it's all of the added chemicals and preservatives and artificial flavors. So the wannabe entrepreneur in me at the time saw a gap, an opportunity in the market. I was like, maybe the right approach here, instead of focusing on a beverage, let's shift focus on the production process. Can we make this better? Can we balance the commercial aspects of a beverage? Because that's the reason why beverage companies add all these things, that it impacts our health, maybe not the first time, but over consecutive use or consumption, is because of commercial scalability, because they want to make money, rightfully so. Otherwise, you'll end up with a health unstable product. You can't get consistency. So you have to use all these industrial approaches to beverages. However, because of there's no other options, you end up compromising the health aspects of a beverage. So the gap or the problem we wanted to solve, like, can we balance both? Can we commercialize the good old age fermentation that humanity has been fermenting and using for thousands of years, maybe more, and make it commercially viable that anybody can make it, make it so simple to use so that everybody wins? The beverage producers can make commercially viable beverage. They can innovate on how to create the flavors, and consumers end up, like me, end up with a beverage that make them feel good, create the social connection. And, you know, it's also good for them. So that was the birth of the company. So when things opened after COVID, completely made a pivot towards the commercialization, the production process, brought in microbiologists on the team, secured a small research grant, and we developed the first generation of the process. 3 years later, right now, our solution to this problem is that we built a data model that reconstructs flavors using fermentation derivatives, all using natural production, and a process that would create these drinks that are based on fermentation and using simple natural ingredients, using existing equipment, reducing the cost of goods, reducing production time, and creating consistency, shelf stability without pasteurization, without additives, all using the existing infrastructure and equipment. There's no need for new hardware. So that's the company we're at right now. So we're just finished the development of all of this technology. We proved it in the commercial setting. We're filed for 6 patents to protect our IP. And now we're doing pilot projects. So we're working with a winery to become their like external R&D product development arm. We're also launching our own line of drinks. So we did small pilot launch here in Toronto and Guelph, and we're extending the channels to market through sales. The goal of these pilot sales is to get the product to interact with the consumer, get feedback from the consumer on the brand, and then take it back to our technology, improve it, and so forth. And that's kind of the self-improvement or continuous improvement cycle that we're following.
I love how you had a challenge and you thought, okay, this is affecting me, so I'm going to start working on this. I'm curious, as you've gone through your journey, were you surprised? Because I think I know the answer. We haven't chatted about this, but I would suspect that as you're going through this, you probably realize there's a lot more people than just you that were suffering from this. And I'll give you one of my own. When I was younger, there was a certain type of alcohol when I would have it. It was only this one type of alcohol. So I have to wonder if it was the alcohol itself or there was an additive being in, and my face would go red and I'd feel the pressure and I'd have to drink a ton of water. And nowadays, but as I'm older, I'm a lot more careful about what I put into my body. And I think you're onto something here for things that are more natural, but I'd love to hear about that. Did you find there was a bigger community of just Subi going through this type of thing?
Absolutely. And that was one of the drivers that actually drove me to do this. When I started to make my own, you know, prototypes at home, many people gave me the exact feedback. Like, oh, this tastes good. I'm having the same problem. I'm switching from beer to wine or to something else. Or I'm drinking soda water, all that stuff. And just to be clear, like, we're not only making alcoholic drinks. Because with fermentation, it's easier to start with alcohol. That's usually a natural byproduct of fermentation. Now we're developing the non-alcoholic line of fermented drinks. And later on, we're developing our technology even more. We're just about to start the research to develop this new line of drinks where we can replace alcohol altogether. So more on this later.
Yeah, that's exciting because I think, like, Al and I have talked about this too. I think you have a segment of the population, or I would say a large segment of the population, that are looking for alternatives to alcohol. Like, let's go out and be social, but we don't always need to use what we've always had. So I think you're onto something there.
So I have a question. You said when you're first developing this, talking to some of the manufacturers, if you will, it's not beer, it's not wine, it's not cider. We're not interested. So what do you call your drinks?
That's a very good question. So it's an evolving process, but I call it Brucha, B-R-U-C-H-A, and we actually trademarked that name. But, like, you know, people who develop brands, they'll know, like, you start with something and you may end up tweaking and changing things as it interacts more with the consumer.
Yeah, okay.
We call it a gut-friendly alternative to social drinks. The official name is Brucha.
All right.
It's brewed. And the origin, it's not longer, but the original was a kombucha culture that I used in my kitchen.
Yeah, okay.
And now we kind of, obviously, we're more advanced in this. We use biotechnicians and we have microbiology science behind what we're doing. But back in those days, in 2019, 2020, that was it.
All right. So now I know what to look for. Can you talk a little bit maybe about AI, which is, of course, at the forefront of everyone's conversation these days? So can you talk a little bit about how Culture Rebellion is or has used AI in your fermentation tech and maybe how that's challenged some of the industry norms?
AI is a buzzword, obviously. You know, I'm not going to hide that. And, you know, artificial intelligence is a broad field. The one that people usually familiar with is machine learning, and most recently is large language models and generative AI. So AI has been around for many, many years. What's changed is two things. One, the industry introduced large language models, and being ChatGPT and the other derivatives of that, but also access have changed. Literally everybody can use LLM. So that's where all the conversation and all the doom and gloom and all the news that you've been hearing about. But AI has been around for many, many years. For us, AI is different, obviously. AI is a double-edged sword, for lack of better words, or it's a tool, basically. Like the way we look at our AI, it's like a very smart team member who doesn't complain and has no biases. The more you train it, the better it gets. And that's how we treat it. It's part of the team, part of the process. So our human team members work with AI. AI does not dictate everything and it doesn't know all the answers. You have to work with it. But AI has the ability to be way more efficient than any human. So it cuts down on time. And this is one of our value propositions in the product development side of things, is that it will have the ability and the potential to significantly reduce the cost of R&D and product development when you're putting together a new flavor or a new product, a new beverage, especially with fermentation. Because fermentation is unpredictable, it's messy. You don't know what you're going to get. And you have to wait sometimes days, sometimes weeks to find out what happened. So, and this is, I think, again, that's a challenge for every producer. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why industries who work or companies who work in brewing and wine and cider, these drinks has been tried for many, many, many years. So it's been trusted, it's been done. You can innovate, you can change things here and there, but to completely change the whole process is a challenge. Basically, in the absence of the tools that we've developed and the expertise that we brought into this side of the business, it's be hard. Like you have to go back and do this over tens or maybe more longer years to come up with results. One good thing, like one key things we've done, and again, we're leveraging the advancement on many aspects of technology around us. In 2019, 2020, that was the emergence of the plant-based food and the cultured meat. So there's a technology called precision fermentation that kind of evolved or around this. We're using some version of this technology, and I think we're one of maybe the only one or the first companies who actually to apply this type of tried and proven technology on beverage production. So between this technology and the advent and the evolution of the AI and accessibility of AI, I think that kind of helped us put all these things together and to advance and create the company.
It's interesting, and I've heard this as a bit of a consistent theme with people that we've talked to and asked that question about, you know, how they're implementing AI with their business. And again, it's the common thread right now. And you said, you know, using it as a collaborator, someone to help. It does some things better, but it doesn't replace humans. It's a resource that you can rely on. So I find that interesting. And it does sound, though, that you've already found the way of introducing AI into the company to be able to obviously improve your product and improve your methods.
Yeah. I mean, we're still learning. Hopefully we'll continue to learn till the very end. But yeah, I mean, things evolve and change over time. But so far, that's how we're approaching AI.
Hey, Subi, one of the things that we've benefited from, and I'm talking about me, Al, and Joe, is we've had a lot of conversations with entrepreneurs and business leaders, and we've had many as clients that we've seen go from early stage like you, from an idea to building a massive company, to private equity coming in and buying them out, sort of thing. So the whole way. And I even look at our journey and I look at the times where we had this idea. I was so excited about it. And then the next day I'm wanting to pull my hair out. And when I look back at all the people that I've had chats with or just watched how, you know, them build their journey, you see that entrepreneurship is really as much about that emotional resilience as it is the business strategy you have, right? Is there anything that you can share with us about, were there any, you know, limiting beliefs that you had along the way that kind of you had to push through and say, hey, I'm going to do this anyway?
How much time do we have?
Oh, hey, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this was the biggest, or it still is to a certain extent, the biggest challenge that I'm facing, at least. Making that move from, you know, the corporate environment. I mean, working in the corporate has its own challenges, but it gives you that perception of kind of security or safety. You know, it kind of masks out a lot of triggers that typically you don't need to observe or look at when you're working in that environment. Once you make the switch and you're on your own, you're working with the unknown, you have no idea what's going to happen. I'm talking to you today, like 3 years later, we have a better idea about our market fit now. We know exactly what we're doing. We have customers. But 2 years ago, like, it was scary at points. So dealing with this, you know, self-doubt, am I good enough? Is this going to work? You know, what am I doing? Like, oh my God, like, why am I doing this? You know, all these thoughts start to come out. And they've always been there. It's not like, you know, this is because you're an entrepreneur. It's moving away from that shield, the secure corporate shield. I think for me, at least in my experience, put me in a position where all these things suddenly got exposed. And you got to deal with that. And that was the biggest challenge for me as an entrepreneur. Business is not that difficult. Like, I've been around for years. I did my MBA. I have a good experience. I know how business runs. The challenge is me. Me getting out of my way, believing in myself, you know, the imposter syndrome, that's real.
It's very real.
The negative self-talk, you know, all that stuff. Becoming aware of that, that was a big transformative kind of step. And it's a work in progress.
Yeah, absolutely. I will share this with you. We've had many conversations with people and people incredibly successful in every walk of life. And they all admit to that. Like, every once in a while, that imposter syndrome creeps in. And you just have to shove that back down. And I'll ask Al to share. He had a quote the other day that might be useful to you. And it's not Al's quote, but
I stole it.
He quoted it in one of our meetings, but it's the journey we're on. And it sounds like it's the journey you're on. So Al, if you want to share that with Subi.
And it was in speaking with, they haven't been on our podcast yet, but they will be. And maybe they'll bring this up at the time. So I hope I don't spoil it for everyone. I hope it'll steal their thunder. But he said, I don't know where I'm going, but I know exactly how I'm going to get there, which I think is so true. Like, you have this idea about what the end product or where you're going to end up, but it doesn't work out that way. And what does work out is the steps along the way. And you look back and it's probably a very different journey than you thought it was going to be. But in the end, you knew what you were going to do, but where you thought you were going to end up is very different. I'm sure you've seen that already with what you're doing. And I'm sure there's been some changes along the way where you've had to change routes.
100%. And I tell you, like, I worked with entrepreneurs and startups for years on the outside as an advisor, as a mentor. But until you're a founder yourself, you have no idea. You'll have no idea.
So talk about that a little bit. And I'm sure that when you started the journey, you know, I always like to say a little bit of naivete is a good thing when you're an entrepreneur, because if you knew everything at the end or at the beginning that you know at the end, there's no way you ever would have done it. So looking back now on your journey, is there one piece of advice or one key thing that you wish you'd known when you started out Culture Rebellion?
Yeah, don't talk to anybody. To your point, and I think I heard the founder of NVIDIA say that in an interview last year. He said, like, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, had I known what I'm getting into, I would never have done this. Yeah. So looking back, I mean, there are many other pieces of advice I could give, but they're technical. But what really mattered to me was coming from outside of the industry, because, you know, I completely shifted and changed industries altogether. I think that helped shield me from a lot of the negative kind of perceptions and it can be done mentality. So if I knew like what beverage producers have to deal with, I probably would never touch this industry or at least try to do anything like that. So not knowing, like, ignorance is bliss. I think in this case, it's very true, very true. But also, like, listening to my gut instinct.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, that was clever.
It's all about the gut. Listening to my gut instinct. I made decisions in the past, in the early days, against my intuition and gut instinct, and I got less than favorable results. So now I know, like, talk to people, get advice, but at the end of the day, listen to your gut. Trust yourself and listen to your gut.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we are almost at the point, my favorite part of the episode, where Al has his signature question, because it is a little more philosophical. But before we get to that, because I really enjoyed our first two conversations, and I hope there's going to be more, and I'm sure there will be. But what does success look like to you, Subi?
Oh, man. Honestly, I can give you the cliche answer, But to me right now, success is coming at the end of the day home and spending genuine happy time with my children. I have two kids. I have a 3.5-year-old and 7 months old and a startup. So just coming home at the end of the day or waking up in the morning and spending the hour or two with them, genuinely being, you know, engaged with them, not distracted by all the crazy stuff that's happening outside of those interactions. I think to me, that's success. Obviously, I want the business to succeed. I want to scale. I want to get more customers. But this is very important to me because in the early days, I did get distracted. I let the pressures of work and all the challenges affect me, and it impacted the relationship a little bit. But the funny thing is, the moment I snapped out of that and started to focus on spending time with them, I'm actually getting more even on the business side. Like many great ideas come, or solutions just start to out of nowhere when I'm like having fun and laughing with being silly with my son or my daughter. It's fascinating how this works out. So it's a very rewarding experience. And I would really love to continue to do this. Like we're on the verge of growth and scale up. There's some interesting things happening right now. So success to me, achieving all that business success and growth while maintaining that aspect of family time, uninterrupted, focused family time, fully committed and engaged.
I love your answer. And you know why? Because this podcast, and I'll share this with you, I don't talk about it all the time, but I do tell people offline usually. But one of the things I'll tell you is these are evergreen. I have people who come back and comment on an episode we did 3 or 4 years ago. But the other thing that I really like is what you just said about your kids, that's recorded forever.
Yeah.
And it's something that when you're gone, they can come back, hey, that's how dad felt about this. So we've recorded this moment in time. So that's a gift that we'll give to them forever, right? So I'm very happy about that. Al, that is a perfect segue to jump into your signature question because I just feel that might be part of the answer. I have a feeling, but we can continue down that path because I think it's such a good path to go down.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I will add, I'll echo Robin's sentiments about your answer. That is a great answer. And treasure those moments because they go by all too quickly, as any parent with adult children will tell you. And my kids are growing up now. They're all on the university path and certainly looking back, some of those key, really happy, enjoyable moments were, well, not that they've gone away, but you do need to treasure them when they're young because they pass by all too quickly. I can definitely attest to that. So yes, I would love to hop into this and hear what you have to say. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So with Culture Rebellion's focus on innovative fermentation technology, what proverbial trees might you be planting that you hope will shape the future of the industry or sustainability for the next generation?
Well, I mean, you shared this question with me ahead of time. So I never thought about this side of what I'm doing is that they're actually planting trees or planting seeds for change. So thank you for, you know, making me pay attention to this. And I had to think about it. And I came up with two things. There's personal and there's business. So on the business side, what we're doing right now, like we're building a platform. It's a platform for people to use our technology to build on it. So we want to unlock fermentation for everyone to use to create drinks, flavors, innovation. And to me, that's important because humanity has been connecting on food and drinks for ages. Food pairings, wine, dinners, meals, family meals, all that stuff. Drinks bring friends together. You have fun together. You complain. You celebrate. Over the years, these drinks quality has been degrading, and we want to fix that. But also, we want to enable many, many people to innovate on that side of things. And like I mentioned, we want to even push the envelope beyond this. We want to completely transform that social experience, the social drinks, make them healthier, better, and potentially bring in completely new different types of drinks into the market in the future. And we're building tools for producers and later on for even individuals to access and design and create. So hopefully that will become part of those trees that we're planting. On the personal side, my journey, my story, how I completely changed things in my late 40s, I'm 52 right now. I hope that would send a good example for my kids and also for others. Is like, you know, it's never too late to make change. If you're not happy about where you are, make a change. It's scary as hell. But I think as time goes by, I think it'll become easier and easier for people to make change like this. So those are my two things I could think of.
Well, those are good things, my friend. And I love that second part. It never is too late for change. And I think a lot of people get to the point where sounds like too much work, too much effort, got to get out of my comfort zone, right? But to your point, it's never too late. So yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Subi, this has been awesome. I knew based on our first conversation, this was going to be amazing. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about what you're doing or what you're doing at your company?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn is great. Website of the company. And yeah, I think this is the best way to reach out to me.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you again. We're going to continue the conversation offline. That does it for today's episode. I think you can tell Al and I really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for us, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. We've seen it here. Success leaves clues, my friends, and it's never too late. We'll see you next time.